Captain Buxton, Reel 4. Now, you went back to France in the spring of 1916, in April, to the Ypres sector of the front. Now, the whole of 1916, as far as the British Army in France was concerned, seems to have been a preparation for one major operation, the Somme. Can you remember what kind of preparations for that major battle of the year you were personally involved in? Give me an idea of the sort of build-up of that period before the battle began in July.
I don't think I remember very clearly, but undoubtedly it included a lot of aggressive work like raids, but a lot of training on attacking positions, on if the enemy got hold of your rifle, how to use it to get rid of him by using the butt of the rifle while he held the other side, and all kinds of things like that, that were for close fighting. I don't, I'm afraid, remember anything very clearly as definite preparation, which was no doubt going on.
Yes. You mentioned the raids, though. Can you remember any examples of those? Could you describe one for me in a little detail?
I just had to look. We pushed these Bangalore torpedoes, which were really just long pipes full of dynamite, under the wire of the enemy, and blew up entrances into his trench for when we did the attack. And sometimes we did this to bluff him that the attack was going to be opposite. One raid we did, we had special commendation because, as luck would have it, one of our shells destroyed the Bangalore torpedoes, fell on our own, and the young officer and men went through and did the job, even though they had had wounds and had their Bangalore torpedo destroyed.
Was it during this period that you had one particularly successful trench raid which resulted
No, it was later.
Oh, I see.
Another thing we did on those occasions at times when everything was to bluff the enemy was we would go up by one trench that we could be seen and then come down by another trench that we couldn't be seen. And so we bluffed the Germans that we were going to attack there and that large numbers of troops were coming up to the front to attack, whereas the attack was actually on our left. Little tricks like that kept us busy.
Mm-hmm. Now, a little later on in 1916, you were involved in one quite major trench raid, this successful one.
I think that's...
The raid I have in mind was the one that took place in September, during the course of the Somme battle.
Yes. We had gone up. I had gone up with my runner to take over trenches that had been captured that morning, and amusingly to show the problems of deep dugouts, alone we two captured two officers and 52 men as they came out one by one, and we took their rifles from them. They came up this deep dugout, which, when we went down into it later, next day, had wallpaper on the officers' quarters and the most beautiful slide to bring wounded down onto an operating table. But these deep dugouts had their problems in that every big shell that fell shook the earth, and you never knew how near it was. Well, that evening, the brigadier found that we had got separated from the next brigade because there was a deep ravine called the Nab, N-A-B, and his brigade had kept along the left-hand ridge, and the other brigade had gone by the right-hand ridge, and so nobody knew where they were. So they asked me personally to go over and discover, and I took Private Widdop, who was an absolutely certain loyal man who would stand by you in anything, and we crawled down this nab and up the very steep other side and then got to the trench. And we hadn't a clue whether it was German, occupied by Germans or British. And so very stealthily we got into it and began walking up it, needless to say, hearts palpitating, when suddenly I heard a laugh that I recognized as belonging to a boy called Ronald Carr, one of Carr's biscuits. And I had dropped in exactly where he was and conveniently before where the Germans were. Those were some of the amusements and problems of the war, to get the link remade when two major units had got separated by the lie of the land.
There's a few general questions that I wanted to put to you, which refer really to the war as a whole, just sort of looking back at the whole thing and giving me certain reactions to it. First of all, I wondered, when you went out to France, did the war prove to be different in any particular ways from what you'd expected it was going to be?
I would have said that the difference was the difference of anything when you go into something completely new. You were so surprised at seeing exactly what a trench was, what a dugout was. You were surprised at seeing the actual things that you've been doing in training working out in battle.
Yes.
That kind of surprise. Mm.
What aspects of life on the Western Front, looking at the thing as a whole now, did you personally find most difficult? How did you find, over a long period of time on the Western Front, that the sort of conditions you had to live under affected one's morale?
Yes, that's a very interesting question, but I think one has to answer it in one's own setting, because undoubtedly there were some units that had not got high morale that went downhill very quickly under those circumstances. But I found in my company that by taking care for games and for writing when casualties took place to each parent or relation, caring about sickness or money not being paid to relations, there did remain right to the end of when I was wounded a tremendous esprit de corps. I don't remember any sense of the company tagging off by the succession of bad weathers, casualties, battles, and so on. I think it very much depended on whether you kept a real family spirit going in the unit.
That's a remarkable state of affairs, really. At least it strikes me as a remarkable state of affairs, particularly thinking of the sort of casualties and the loss of one's chums and things like that, which must, I would have thought, have been terrible on one's morale.
Yes. Casualties were tremendous. A company went over with four officers and, say, 160 men. While I commanded it, we lost 32 officers and 400 men. And they were personal friends of mine. I knew them. I wrote to their relations and so on. I think perhaps the continual seeing of men doing their duty at risk in order to get the job done or in order to help somebody in difficulty wonderfully kept the other side of one's nature thrilled. This man has just been killed. What was he doing? And the whole setting of the situation somehow, on one side, you were terribly sad. On the other side, you were terribly proud. I think that's all I can say.
Did you ever experience a situation, perhaps as a reaction to casualties and the loss of friends, where there was criticism of the way a particular operation had been conducted and blame upon the sort of higher command?
I think we found as far as my men were concerned, that the blame mostly came in the newspapers. We were impressed with the fact that the chief of the corps staff, that's 100,000 men, came to my dugout to see if I needed anything. The general would suddenly come in the trench, and we realized that they were men like we were, and they came to see us, and they may have made mistakes or not, like we did, but I don't remember any kind of modern criticism of the higher command. We felt that they were doing everything they could with what they got.
Yes. So if there was no criticism of the way the war was being conducted, was there any criticism perhaps of lack of resources of any kind which made things difficult for you during the war?
I think the poor politician got most of that, usually at the end of a bit of waggish remark that they hadn't got us ready. Because our equipment, of course, improving all the time, helped us in morale. Whereas if it had been high and then got worse, but all the time we were getting better equipment, we were getting better machine guns, better timber and so on, and therefore we were feeling everything that could be done was being done.
Yes.
At least that's my memory.
Yes. In your memory and in your experience at the time, was there general confidence in the senior command of the army?
Yes, there was a great affection for Dougie Haig and a great confidence in his quiet getting on with the job. I met none of the atmosphere that one sees in the papers nowadays. The army commander Plumer would suddenly appear when you were drilling your company in a field. And we always were enormously elated by his presence.
That's interesting, because one of the accusations that many historians levy against senior commanders in the First World War is that they were out of touch with their men, that they never put in an appearance at the front line, that the staff officers didn't really have a clear idea of what conditions were at particular points of the front where attacks were going to take place. Criticisms like that are so common.
Yes, and we didn't have it at all. I remember both having a night as only a very junior little company commander and corps headquarters and going to tea with the general in divisional headquarters. And the general asking me all kinds of things about what I found with my little company. He was a human man. In fact, the divisional commander made you feel he was much more a father than anything. He was so sympathetic and so really obviously caring about the division.
Yes.
Percival and then Cameron.